Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. As always, I'm grateful to each of you who have joined us either via blogtalkradio.com and its platform. That would be BFC Institute on blogtalkradio.com, or Facebook Live. We're grateful for you, and we hope that we'll be able to engage you in some substantive dialogue here tonight. Perhaps the greatest hope for improving the quality of life for individuals most challenged by social ills within and throughout urban America. That challenge is to turn, the hope is for them to learn how to turn to models of success or best practices and to demonstrate the abilities that we know that are innate within them. We've been talking about success for a few shows here, and we're not going to stop, because that's what we want to encourage. No one who has been successful at anything did so without going through a process. Let me say that again. No one who's been successful at anything, that is to include falling on their face, did so without going through a process. Those who learn best from the experiences of others tend to become and remain successful in their lives. So rather than feeling indicted by someone else's success, ask yourself the question, what can I do to create my own? All right? We're talking from the topic model for social change in urban America. That's our topic tonight. Model for social change in urban America. 657-383-0944. That is the number for you to call in the studio right now, tonight. 657-383-0944. Let me apologize ahead of time. You may hear the birds singing their song. They're right outside of my window here. And I can't seem to stop them, but they sound pretty good. We'll allow them in, allow them to join the conversation too. We're talking from the topic model for social change in America. on this, believe it or not, June 1st, 2021. June 1st, 2021. That means we're in the sixth month of the year already. Yes, beloved, time waits on none of us. No, it won't. Sometimes I wish it would slow down at least and give me a chance to catch up. But no, don't worry on it. From the biblical text for our conversation tonight, we'll look at verses 2 through 3. So again, that's Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 2 through 3. Listen to what it says. Verse 2 says, "And the Lord answered and said, write the vision and make it plain upon tables that he may run that readeth." Verse 3 says, "For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come, and I will not tarry." Listen. At least two things we can extract from the text. We must be, if those that are interested in being successful, you must put some work in. What is that work, Doctor? Write down what you foresee for yourself. Make a notation of it. Jot it. Yeah. So you can always go back to it. Later on, it'll be a measuring tool. Make it plain so whoever reads it understands. Verse 3 tells us that while it's not right now, its time is coming. Ecclesiastes tells us the time for everything, third chapter. Right? And in the end, it will manifest itself. What do I mean by the speak? It'll bring itself to fruition. It'll manifest itself, and it won't tell a tale. But though it takes its time to come to fruition, when the time is right, it will be right. What's yours is yours. I'm talking about this model could change in urban America. If there was anything I could encourage, I would aspire anyone to do, it would be to take this step to look for this social change. Now I hear people talking all the time about what's going on around them in their locality. Some of them are even opining about what's going on in other cities and other states. My God, other countries. But one place that Rick James would tell us it has not changed, where I'm from, the ghetto. Yeah, a.k.a. urban America. Some things are consistent in the ghetto, and you don't have to worry about them changing. Okay, all right, let's get there. I want to identify, for the sake of our conversation process, offer a functional definition of the word progress and process. Progress and process. All right? That's what I'd like to do tonight. And I want to use two historical figures. Both of them are authors. And I think both of their books are apropos to much of what we're speaking of tonight. Now, let me just say that I recognize we've had this conversation previously, and directly and indirectly. But here we are. This is what's different about that is that tonight is Tuesday, June 6, 2021. And we still see the need for social change in urban America. Where's the model? What should we seek to emulate, to extrapolate? All right? So let's talk about progress first. I think we can agree if we would look it up and source it But I think in summation, it would be a forward or onward momentum or movement, right? It can be in the form of some sort of objective or some sort of goal towards something you're working on, okay? But eventually, with it, you see that you're making advance. Now, your progress does not have to keep up with anybody else's progress. As long as you are progressing towards the point and the vision that you wrote for yourself, you're doing good. It may not be keeping up with the Joneses or the Richards or anybody else. But as long as you can keep up with yourself and you can see that you're making steady movement, advancement in the direction that you sought out for yourself, whatever that is. Now, say you want to be a professional thief or robber, that comes with risk. There are occupational risks and hazards. And I really would discourage that, right? Because you would be making your success off of someone else's loss. And you'll find that that's a problem. Eventually, it'll catch up with you. All right? So there are some things that we can do to be successful. Let me just say it like this. We talk about models for social change. Consider this, beloved. Three things that you want to look at if you want to be successful at a thing. And this is something that I've taught often and I continue to expound. First, ask yourself, the creator that made you, how can I please Elohim God, the creator, with whatever I seek to do? Then ask yourself, what I'm aiming to do, what kind of public need can I meet with it? You may have to reflect on this and analyze this. Okay. What kind of public need can I do? How can I help other people in the process? And lastly, how can I sustain myself by pleasing God, serving the public, and maintaining myself? I believe if you have those three ingredients, those three elements, you can find success. And you can progress toward that at your pace. Now, so what is the process then, Doctor? We talked about progress, moving forward, making advancement. And if you're standing in the same place and you're not doing anything, this is 2000, you hear me talk about the date, this is 2021. There are some people still stuck in 2000, 2010, 2015. Not to beat you up, but that's an indication that you're not making progress. Some of our young people, some of our young folks still ain't moved, still in the same place, looking to hang out on the block, looking to find happiness in the streets. I love you. That's why I'm telling you this. Listen, the change that you're looking for, the social change you're looking for, is not in being able to come together in what you call a protest or engaging yourself in riotous type behavior. That's not it. You can do far more with your time. In fact, I would argue that your time is best spent when you're working on yourself first. One day you'll meet up with other people down the road of life, and you all may cross paths, but your time is best spent when you're doing self-reflection and self-development and making a change for you. When each of us do that, urban America can be improved. But to expect one or two people, or a handful of folk to do it all, it's not realistic. Not at all. Okay? What's this process, Doctor? Let's define it. It's simply a series of steps or actions that you take in order to achieve that goal you set for yourself. That's all it is. Whatever the actions are. Well, how do I know what to do? You got to ask yourself where you're trying to go. If you know you in Nashville, Tennessee, right, and you're trying to go further south, let's say to Montgomery, Alabama, I recommend you, if you don't have it, get you a map and find out how to get from where you are to Interstate 65. South. Don't go north. South. Because if you go north, you'll be going up north. But if you go south, you'll be going further down south, and it'll take you straight to Montgomery. You'll see other signs and whatever. But I don't want to oversimplify. The point is that this process that we're talking about are these steps. A lot of good people have great ideas, you know. And what they find is they're frustrated because it don't seem like I'm materializing those things that they're working for. And a lot of the times that you're not working and working hard, as it is, you're looking to the next person to your right and looking to your left, and you see another fork ahead of you, and you're thinking, I should be with them. Maybe, sometimes. But oftentimes, until you get you right, you can't keep up with them folks. Somebody say, do you. I ain't going to preach. Look, somebody say, do you. Let them do them, and you do you. All right? That's what this progress is, and process. Model for social change in urban America. This is the model. Not tearing up stuff. Not talking about what you're against. Not calling people out on the council folk or whatever. That ain't gonna get you nowhere. Not going on social media trying to slam somebody. That dog ain't gonna hunt either. Twitter don't care about you. Facebook don't care about you. Instagram don't care about you. And none of these other apps care about you. And the people on there don't care about you. You'll find it out the hard way, though. All right? So care enough about yourself, particularly my brothers and sisters in urban America, to say to ourselves that if the change we want is going to come, we've got to bring it. Who is we? Everybody needing change and is interested in making it happen. Tonight, what I'd like to discuss very briefly in the part of this monologue is some basic steps that one can consider, right, when you're preparing this process that I talked about. And it involves creating a roadmap, an outline, right? It involves being consistent. Well, that means you got to work, beloved. This ain't going to just come to you. No. And it ain't going to happen, excuse my English, it won't happen overnight necessarily. Some things may, but as a whole, you've got to go through the steps. You're trying to go up a flight of 21 stairs. What makes you think you're going to be able to jump from step 1 to 17 or 21 without having some kind of problem or being elevated by something, hoisted? No, it don't work like that. One step at a time. Somebody say one step at a time. Yeah, one step at a time. Good people oftentimes are not familiar with themselves. Oh, doctor, what you said? I said that good people, my people, they're not familiar with who they are and what their real capabilities are. How do you know that, doctor? Well, you see how easy it is for every Tom, Dick, and Harry to suggest to them and place an identity and a purpose on them. They run out trying to keep up with what they said and get caught up in the jam. Help me, Holy Ghost. But when you stop and ask yourself, who am I? It helps you forget about looking at people to the left, to the right, and focus on you. Be totally honest and selfish. Amen. Set them goals for yourself. Whoever you are, whatever you got, work with what you got. Mary J. Blige said, work what you got. You may not have more than the next man or as much as the other man, but work what you got. Then when you do that, you know, look around, find whatever resources that are available. You don't have to beg nobody. You know, you can work for them, you know, but get the resources that you need for yourself. Right? Outline those objectives, the smaller steps. Don't try to take off more than you can, that you can get to where you want to in increments. Then make sure you set those as priorities for yourself. Right? Laying out your timelines, making assignments for yourself. And watch this, beloved, watch this. That's why you don't have time to keep up with nobody else's foolishness. If you got a day-to-day plan for yourself and things that are important to you, what do you have time to be running behind some other clown? Somebody else is engaged in buffoonery. You don't have no time. I'm talking about us, urban America. Talking about us now. Well, you got time to go rob somebody, busting somebody's window out, stealing somebody. You ain't got time for that. You busy, man. I'm busy, man. Trying to get some things done, man. You know what I'm saying? I reached a turning point. I mentioned to you that I wanted to speak very briefly from two historical characters. Y'all heard of Booker T. Washington, Booker Taliaferro Washington, and William Edward Burghardt Du Bois. Historically, people try to pit them against one another. But if you look at their works carefully, you'll realize they wanted the same thing for the same people, just under different situations. And each of them wrote a book, basically, and they expressed that in their own way. Booker T. Washington wrote Up from Slavery and around 1901. He described his own life story, coming out of slavery, and how he positioned himself to do the things that he did when he started the skill school, right? And basically, he was a former slave himself. His family was from a slave community and what have you. He saw it all. He done it all, right? Talked about is how he says up from. He realized that he was down in the heat, but he worked himself up. Beloved, that's where we are today. I don't care what borough or what nook or cranny you come from. You can work yourself out of it. Any situation you find yourself in, you can work yourself out of it. Come on, let's get at it. Let's get out of there. Let's get out of there. Booker T. Washington, Up from Slavery, 1901. Check it out. Check it out. Brother Du Bois, William Edward Burghardt Du Bois, wrote this book entitled Souls of Black Folk, right, in 1903. It's said to be a seminal work, a social model, if you will. In fact, it's considered by many researchers to be a classical reference source in education and sociology, right? Many people go to it and reference it. It focuses on African-American literature, and it has been deemed as a classic, right? In this work, Du Bois proposes that the problem in the 20th century, during that time, is the color line. This issue that people get caught up on what color you are, black and white. In 2021 now, we are looking around and there's a consideration whether you're Asian or whether you are Hispanic. You see how it's evolved now? So in urban America, what people there have to realize is that you're no longer the only person people are talking about. It's not all about you anymore. But guess what? It's always been about you and what you do for yourself. But the rest of the world have concerned themselves with other interest groups now. Many people are angry about that. Part of their frustration, why they protest. But they say, Dad, you ain't giving me no attention. Well, listen, ain't nobody going to love you like you do. I wish I had a witness right there. Who can love you like I do? Nobody. All right, let me, come on, stay focused now. In this book, Souls of Black Folk, he describes the condition and the responses to certain social stimulus and what have you. I won't go into it. Written in 1903 by W.E.B. Du Bois, Souls of Black Folk. Look at Booker T. Washington, Up from Slavery, published in 1901, the first edition of it. And you'll see how both of these brothers talked about same people from different perspectives. Here we are in 2021, and guess what? Folks, some people are still talking about you. Here's the question. What are you saying to and about yourself? At some point, we got to find a turning point. 657-383-0944. Listen to what this brother right now, Tyrone Davis, said, America, urban America. We've got to find a turning point. Listen to him. The number is 657-383-0944. That's the number to call. Listen to Tyrone Davis.
Show love. Keep trying. I'll reach a turning point in my life.
Is that right? Is that right?
I'll reach a turning point, Lord, in my life.
Listen, just for a second. Listen, just for a second. We're going to the phone now. Listen.
I used to stay out all night.
Is that right?
Used to do a whole lot of wrong. And I don't know where I would end up if that sweet thing hadn't come along.
Say what?
If that sweet thing,
yeah,
hadn't come along. No bones or middle down. Finally fell in down. I'm starting to fight. I'm going to in my life.
All right, Sal. All right, hold on. 372, I done reached me a turning point. You know that?
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. Listen, I used to mess up. Pastor Wallen know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, my man wasn't right. That's okay. It didn't make me a bad guy. But I reached a turning point. Listen what he said, Pastor Wallen. He found something. This is the point right here. He found something, some model, some weight that would tie him down. And he found a turning point. You know anything about a turning point, Pastor Wallen? I know you do the flip side thing, but what can you tell me about the turning point?
Hey.
You there, Brother Pastor?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good.
We're good.
Good. Good. Pastor Duffy, y'all got it going on. I can assure you that.
I don't know. I mean, either somebody done been to the tavern or I need to go to one.
Oh, boy.
Wow. All right.
We have a church tonight. We have a church tonight. Go ahead, Brother Pratt. Go ahead, Brother Pratt.
It's a turning point. I know that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, you know, turning points, I think, is great. However, it is somehow sad that it takes so long for people to reach turning points.
Wow.
You know, I was just talking to one of my girlfriends the other day. We were just talking about guys or men, and it seems that, you know, men ain't ready to chill out and settle down till they feel like they have to. So, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe the focus should be reaching a turning point earlier. Yes.
Yeah. I agree with you. You said men. What men you talking about?
Well, we were just talking in general. So men in general. A lot of men that's not married, that, you know, haven't married. They wait till 55, 60. Then, you know, they won't chill out.
I'm going to wait.
Well, yeah, I was just talking. Yeah, but yeah. We were talking about turning points, though. That's a turning point.
Yeah. Look, 872. I ain't going there to the Father's Day show. So then you hitting on something. I ain't gonna even go there with you until the Father's Day show. I'm gonna leave alone tonight. I'm gonna let her go free tonight, Pastor. I'm gonna let
her
go tonight.
Even if you think about God, I mean, look at him. He gotta be upset. Why is it taking people so long to reach that turning point to even come to him?
Wow. He got to be mad, huh? You think you're mad at us, Pastor Wallen? Pastor Wallen, you think you're mad at us?
Sounds just like me right there. Sounds just like me. All of a sudden, I sure would like to get out of what I'm in now. This stuff is tearing me up, weighing me down.
Myself included, you know.
Yeah, it was showing up tough, but I tell you, he accepted me just as I was. I was amazed myself.
Mm. Okay. Now we're talking specifically about urban America, and y'all know we define the parameters there, and we have identified who, what, when, where, and why, right? I keep looking, Pastor Water, at various news stories and the parallels that each city have, while they sometimes 300 and 500 miles away from one another. You know, some of them as much as 1,000 miles away from others. Guess what? They still got the same issue going on. And it begs the question, is somebody, Pastor Waller, engineering this behavior and thus those outcomes to the point that people are not even aware who's controlling them? What do you think about that? We lost 37-2 to hopefully she'll call us back. What do you think about that, Pastor?
Yeah, it's interesting, man.
It really is. It really is.
Yeah, very interesting. Because a lot of people are doing the same thing. They want to get the same thing done.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're not like 2 minutes away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
They can be 1,000 miles, 500 miles away, 100 miles away, still doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it so true? It's happening.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm
going to lean on you for a second. I know you described, you talked about this at length at Nawson, but this trap, it seems to me that there's a social conditioning where people are unconscious. They're not aware of how they're walking right into this trap, but yet they're there. Yet they find themselves there. And it may not necessarily be drugs and or alcohol, but other behaviors that are not productive that cause them to stay stuck in one place. We talked about progress being the moving forward. Look at all the time, Pastor. You and I have been working together. It's got to been at least a decade now. Is that right, Brother Preacher? At least.
Yeah.
Some of the same people we know, not to dog them, but they're pretty much in the same spot. The question is why? Is it that we're not, that no one is doing anything, Pastor? Is it that nobody cares? Or what's going on? Help me with that. Now, y'all, 37-2, is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
Okay. Y'all help me with that tonight, because sometimes, Pastor, if you didn't know any better, you would think you weren't doing nothing. And as much as you get up every day, you're probably out there on the block right now, man. You would think you ain't doing nothing. What about that, preacher?
It's just so much going on. It's a lot of work to be done. However, people that's caught up, a lot of them don't even know it's a trap.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It don't just have to be drugs, or it can just be a trap that can get you in many areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and then there happen to be devices that's being used, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of times, Pastor, it's financial traps. People
mm-hmm.
find themselves. I'm going to use myself as an example. 30-something years ago, I was a young college student in Nashville, and the first day on campus, they had all kind of tents with banks. And Pastor, all of them offered me a credit card. Man, I had at least 7 of them. look, man, I'm telling on myself, man. I'm just trying to give you an example of one of the traps. And look, 37-2, wind up defaulting on most of them. Do you know how long it took me to get them paid off? You understand what
I'm saying? Yep, I can just imagine.
I mean, hey, but it was good spending them. But guess what? Then you had to pay the piper. That's just one example of a financial trap good people find themselves caught in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean,
I got 4 myself today that I'm going to keep. But you're right. It makes it so easy for you to just stay charged. Which card would you like? Yeah, you got to pay it back, no doubt.
Well, now, I don't want, because I encourage both my children to get at least one, right? At least one. But we show them how to properly, you know what I mean, pay it off and things of that nature. And when to use it and that sort of thing. So, but I'm just saying, everybody was throwing what seemed to be free money at me. And I'm young, dumb.
Oh, yeah.
How you say it?
Yeah.
Always trying to get some, right? And I don't know no better, you know. Everybody throwing all that free money at me, man. Are you going to give it to me? Okay. All right. I'm going to take it then. And there you go. There you go. I'm better now. I've learned better now. I reached a turning point in my life. A good thing.
And it looks like, I mean, as far as, you know, they're talking about credit reform and all that. You're absolutely right. I had friends that had multiple credit cards, and they weren't even working, but they were just in college, and that was the criteria. Oh, just be a college student. And, you know, like, what?
Why would you
throw money at somebody that can't potentially pay it back because they don't even have a job at this time?
Exactly.
Predatory lending.
Yeah, and to that point, a lot of people came out of college oftentimes with either a job that was beneath their skill set, you know, or they were just starting out at a certain salary and couldn't afford all of the, you know, whatever to feed it for themselves. I don't want to scare anybody. Right? And you can get over it. I did. You can get over it. But the point is that what if you had a best practice, Pastor Wallace? What if you had somebody that was a coach to you? You understand what I'm saying? That can say to you, hey, young fella, hey, young lady, consider this or consider that. Couldn't you avoid some of those same pitfalls that were made by us? Pastor?
If they open up and receive it, sure. Because they have to be open, you know, to receive that coaching. They're not going to have that. And all they have is that the opportunity to get the credit card, which means they're being lured into a thought.
Right.
And once the thought takes place, start to manifest, they ain't thinking about no coach at that point. All they think about is that money. But it would be nice. It would be great, you know, for them to have somebody that can do that. Because most of the time they're going to spend, especially when you're young and dumb, full of fluid and all, ready to do it like I was. Even though I never got any, but, man, just think. A lot of people got some cards, man, because when you're young and you don't know any better, that's what you're supposed to do. They're all funny. You know, they're going to lure you in, right?
Yeah.
They can lure you in quick.
That's the truth, man. That is so the truth. Well, so, Pastor, we're then now, okay. So, Pastor, some people would say by discouraging you from participating in all this, what seems to be free stuff, you're cheating me of immediate gratification, of being happy right then, and you know what I mean? Being able to keep up with what everybody else got materialistically. What about that, Pastor? You saying I can't have that? What?
No, I wouldn't be able to respond on that or suggest because I never had one. You know, I never had none of that. Hey, he gonna use $10,000. He gonna use $1,000. He gonna use this. He never came my way. So I mean, yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm listening to what you're saying. You're right. And so when people say, a lot of times people make the case that don't talk about young people like that. In other words, don't tell the truth about where they are. Okay? Truth is, there's a reason you're there. And the only way you would be able to back out of where you are is to understand how you got there, right? You came in through the front door, and a lot of times you came in with a bang, right, and ran straight into the back wall. And you don't even know why you dazed and you got a hickey upside your head. Huh? Wouldn't a friend explain that to you? Look here, man, next time, if you're going to come in, take your time, open the door, walk slowly, and be careful you don't trip over that. That way you can walk out of here unbruised. Ain't nothing wrong with that, is it, Thursday, Tim, Jim?
Not a thing.
I mean, are you cheating of a, are you cheating a person, especially if you grew up like me and you were deprived of some things, right? Are you cheating them by encouraging them to delay their happiness or gratification for a time? Listen, look, before you think about that for a second, but before you answer that, let me read this text again, 37-2, that I read in the monologue, because this is essentially what it's saying. I was reading from Habakkuk, the second chapter and the third verse. Look what it says. For the verse 1 said, write the vision and make it plain, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it said, put it on the tables so that anybody see it, anybody that read it, they can run with it, okay? But this is what verse 3 says. For the vision is not yet appointed. We telling young folk to work towards something that they don't have a reward for today. Uh-oh. Are y'all with me? You with me, 32?
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling young folks, work hard towards something and they can't see the reward right now. Then it goes on to say, but at the end, it shall speak. In other words, your efforts will show what the results are. You with me, 37-2?
I am.
How do you tell young people who seek trouble, disappointment, death, often destruction, dismay, how do you tell them to be patient, wait, work towards something, when really what they're going after is going to make them feel good right now, not tomorrow?
Yeah.
I mean, you understand what I'm saying? We've been hearing a while of people here, when you die, you go to heaven, it'll be all right. Jesus is going to fix it. Well, I want some heaven right here on earth. That wasn't baby was saying. How do you talk to that? How would you frame that conversation, 37?
Well, I mean, if they're going to be chasing after today, then you need to fully do your report on today. Don't just look at the party. Don't just look at the celebration. Look at the after party and the aftermath of the after party. Then you need to decide, do you want to be looking over your shoulder? Do you want to be in debt to where you can't pay it back? Do you? Yeah, they need to do more homework. And then they seriously, if they did, they probably would be choosing different. But no, like you said, they looking at immediate right now, what it looks like, glamour and glitz.
Right.
They need to just get advice and, hey, talk to some people that's done it and that's done been through it and see how they faring afterwards even.
Yeah.
Because it surely ain't all what it crack up to be.
You know, Pastor, I preached a sermon, don't try to hustle Jesus. And at the premise, basically, I was speaking when Jesus and Matthew found himself straight out of, when he left John the Baptist, found himself in the wilderness, right? And the tempter, the enemy, came to him at some point and told him, look, man, you got power, dude. You can do anything you want. Angels will come to your rescue. I'm paraphrasing a little bit fast, well. And he said to him, look here, man. Yeah, I could jump, like you say, from this cliff, and yes, angels could catch me. But you need to understand that I know something. I know a secret. I know that man don't live by his appetite for immediate gratification. Uh-oh. Wait a minute. Jesus didn't say it quite like that, 37-2. But if you exegete the text, that's what he was talking about. You cannot be successful by jumping at every little bit and carrot that someone's swinging in front of you.
Because
you oftentimes don't even know where it's coming from. I wish I could.
You don't even know the motives in which they came.
You understand what I'm saying? You understand
why do people think that folks is just offering stuff for nothing? Things is free. Oh, just because. No, it's not because. There's this ploy.
Right? It's a trap. There's a trap.
Yeah.
And how do you get something in a trap? What do? You said bait. Come on, Pastor. Talk to me now. What's that text you often speak of, Pastor? Go ahead, Pastor.
Well, 30:72 said it all, though, man, and I'm telling you, it'd be good to be patient and look things through without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
However, but that instant gratification is so strong to the point where I can read the scripture today versus what I was unable to do years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into the trap. Even I wasn't going to wait for a week to get a check when I can get it right now. That's mentality. That's where the trap is. Yeah, so
right.
In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 20 says that we may come to our senses and escape
my God.
The snare, the trap.
Yes,
yeah, having been taken by him to do his will. So 30:72, when he got me, now I got to do his will because I was
going
into the trap. And then I trapped other people along with me. Could you imagine how I felt when I got, I was like, man, look what he did to me.
That
was real smooth. Wasn't that good about it, but he was smooth, though. The trap is real is what I'm saying. It's real.
It is.
But can I ask
and anybody can fall for it.
Can I ask this question, Pastor? Don't we play a role?
Yeah, you're Jesus, bro.
Huh? Pastor, don't we play a role in making ourselves available for the trap, either knowingly or unknowingly?
We do when you use it like that, knowingly and unknowingly. Yeah. Because nobody
sees
me in that trap. I had known what I know now. Mm-mm, no
yes,
way.
Sir. Yes. Yes, sir.
Consequences and all that I went through. Oh no, I definitely wouldn't have went because I would have had the right instruction. But being that I didn't have that, hey, I got to get it right now because this is what I see. I see it at work right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I do now?
What's that?
When the temptation comes to me now, versus how I used to say, I'm going to get it right now because it's going on right now, I would say not right now. See, the flip side caused me to say not right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'll think this thing over now. See?
Right.
I thought about it. I'm like, okay, the decision I make now depends on what's going to happen if I get back into the swing of things. So automatically, I stay free because I
stay
long
so,
time.
So, Pastor Wallen, I want to ask him a question. So, and not to try to, because I am nowhere near where I need to be spiritually as far as in God, but I used to pray this prayer that God would open my eyes to things. Did you ever pray that prayer?
I did.
That he would give you sight and vision?
I did. And the reason why I prayed that 30:72 is because I knew I would go all the way. And I knew when I heard those three words that God is able, and I had to fit in the, all I was designed to do was experience the power of change because I couldn't do it myself. So I prayed that prayer and experienced it a while. It took a little while, but he realized that he discovered that this boy really trusts me. I haven't even shown him nothing. I haven't shown him nothing, and he's still showing up. You see, that's why I believe that he's going to do it. But I had to wait on him because he waited on me for a long time. So I said, well, maybe if I just wait a little longer, maybe he'll do something. Because the enemy was like, that boy there sure enough is coming back again. He's coming back again. He's coming back again.
Mm-hmm.
And he Lord hadn't showed me nothing, but I kept showing up. So, yeah, I prayed that prayer. And, it was tough.
You got to be careful what you pray for is what I was saying. Because, again, my eyes has been opened. Every day I wake up to new things and new understanding and new, and oftentimes with understanding, the truth hurts. You know, you see people and you see situations and you see things that maybe you at one point would have went for or went along with, and how people are just so dead and sleep to the point to where they will defend wrong. Mm-hmm. They will defend it. They will fight you. And they wrong.
Right.
That's really deep. I mean, and again, to know that maybe, you know, you was that person at one time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was real tough. We joined by 4,600 at St. Louis. We're talking from the topic model for social change in urban America. We started by acknowledging that many people are calling for change, social change. And we want to talk about what is the model for the social change. So far, we've discovered that it begins with a person, not with a crowd. Let me say that one more time. It begins with the individual, not with the crowd that you can form. And that's where a lot of people
are
looking for somebody else to be the basis of what they do.
Let me give you a good example. You know, everybody was talking about with police brutality. I want you to tell me if this is racist. You know, they say that instead of calling the police, you should call a social worker. Well, there in Minneapolis, a lady who lives near, right at 38th and Chicago streets.
Mm-hmm.
That's where George Floyd Memorial is.
Okay.
She had a family issue,
okay.
And she called the police, a domestic dispute.
Okay.
She called the dispatcher, 911 dispatcher, took her name and everything, and she got the address. She wanted to have a police dispatch to her house.
Mm-hmm.
The dispatcher said, you're going to have to walk down three blocks and meet the police down there because they don't come in that area, which she did. They filed a report, and they gave her a lift one block toward her home but told her she had to get out. Now, is that racist? Or
no.
They are... Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the circumstances. I'm familiar with what you're speaking of. The circumstances are such that they've been created like that. And that's one of the reasons why we're having this conversation. Because you have to ask yourself, what are the expected, intended, unintended consequences of behavior? Go ahead. I'm sorry. You finish your point there.
Well, I agree with you. And that's not the only case. Police are not answering these calls like they used to.
Yeah. Sure,
if they see two people fighting, they get on their loudspeaker and tell them to break it up and keep on driving.
Well, that's
because,
you know. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you what you're saying is true because they don't want to get involved when if they break it up and handle these problems the way that they think is best. People be hollering, claiming police brutality. So let the people go ahead and fight it out, and then what's left, they call the ambulance, they come and pick it up. Ambulance don't even report neither. Ambulance won't go into an area unless they got police escort.
Well, St. Louis, I was just in Atlanta about a week ago, and I just read where a council person, young African-American male,
mm-hmm.
who ironically signed a bill to defund the Atlanta Police Department, as I understand. He was one of those council people that voted to defund it. Well, he was carjacked. And what was sad is the response to it, because guess who he called? Guess who the first people he called? Naturally, the police responded to it. But then when you look at where he was and the circumstance, and this is the point that I'm making here, it wasn't any white people or anybody else. It was in a predominantly black neighborhood that he was carjacked. You see what I mean? And to your
mm-hmm.
point, when police are hesitant, it didn't matter that he was elected official. You were in that situation, and just imagine the people that live there on a regular basis who want some sort of order and don't want to have to worry about having physical confrontation. You understand? Well, that's really what the role I realize that there's a need for overall a different approach to policing. As Pastor Wall would tell you, I said it all the time, the first thing is when we police ourselves, we can eliminate the need for a lot of patrols. And you don't have to have so many police in your neighborhood, on your block, in your street, when we police ourselves collectively. By we,
you mean as an individual?
Yeah, the people that live there, the residents of your neighborhood, when they have neighborhood watch and they have organized processes by which everybody follow those rules in your neighborhood, you don't have to worry about that. But
well, yeah, it is. The only thing they can do is watch. They can't do nothing to apprehend because of liability. Yeah.
You're right, but here's what I'm saying. My son, your son, and I'm just speaking in hypothetically, and other people's sons that walk those streets, they are going to hold one another accountable that nobody breaks into anybody's car. Nobody breaks into anybody's house. Nobody assaults anybody. Nobody rapes them. Nobody robs. You understand what I'm saying? There's accountability there. We're not going. We don't necessarily have to tell the police if we tell one another, hey, man, we ain't doing that. Come on, brother. We're trying to live a peaceable, sensible. That's the point I'm trying to make. And so the topic tonight is really about the social change. I would agree with the premise that there's a need for social change in America. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But who is it that needs to change, and change what? Now, the reality is there are a lot of people that I personally know who struggle and try to figure out, hey, man, what really am I, where am I going? Why am I just seem like I'm spinning in circles? And Pastor, when you think about it, you think about people who are despondent and in despair. Can you appreciate how every day you wake up, you don't seem like you're going anywhere? You're just standing in the same spot and look like the rest of the world moving on around you. Can you appreciate that, Pastor? How people could say to themselves, man, hey, you know, I'm going to just find anything to make me happy for the moment because I don't see nothing tomorrow.
Well, you know, you got to remember also we talked earlier about how a person could be lured into something when
that's
just
true.
Being still, being innocent, not a care in the world, just having fun, being a kid, as a kid should be. But all of a sudden, something interesting has been brought into the community. Remember, it was not there. The kid didn't bring it in, but it sure got there. And you're talking about, could it have been prevented? Only if the person had some guidance. The person had some guidance, the opportunity to do something like get you a quick dollar. Oh, man, look what I found. It happens like that sometimes.
That's the truth. That's the truth.
If it was not brought down, the person couldn't have never got it.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Man, look, that's on the money right there. You just remind me of something. I never will forget when, I don't know who came up with this and how it came about, but my brother and I, our quickest hustle, man, was to go up to the grocery store and take people's groceries to the car. Man, when they started running us off from that hallway, man, what? We didn't have to steal nothing from nobody then. Because we, you know what I'm saying? Say, look, we make $15, man, and we could buy us cookies, milk, candy, chips, whatever we wanted, man. We didn't have to ask nobody for nothing. And then all of a sudden, our very presence on the store parking lot, criminal is a strong word, but it was clear that we were not welcome there. I'm like, what's up with that, man? that's how we made our money.
Not welcome anymore.
No, but that's what we felt. They start running us off, man. They start telling, no, you can't do that anymore. You can't go and ask people if you could take the groceries to the car anymore. I'm like, oh, man, golly. And eventually that became the norm, and they would hire young folks to work in the store, and they offered to take you. So
So 37 that you left me, man, I couldn't even, not honestly, make my cookies and milk no more. You know what I'm saying? Messed up my
life. Yeah.
But maybe I should have started a lemonade stand, huh? That's what I could have done. I could have started me a lemonade stand.
What?
What's that?
Man, you should have had more than one thing in the works. I mean, when the money starts dropping off from the hustle and the cookies and milk thing, then the lemonade, okay.
I'm just a little young cat in the hood. I ain't thinking about all that. We trying to get some quick money so we can feed our appetite for sweets and all that good stuff. You know what I'm saying? Toronto, Toronto, Canada, joining 60-50. You know what I'm saying, Toronto? All I was trying to do was, it was honest, man. I wasn't hurting nobody. We weren't stealing. We were just making a little money on the side. What do you think about that, Toronto?
I hear you, Rev. I hear you. It could be, hopefully you shared that little money you was able to get. About the policing. Yeah, I mean that's a big problem.
And I think
I don't know how to solve it, but I think yes, police are reluctant to come into certain neighborhoods now. But we're also we've also seen a lot of problems with the police that are outside of the hood that have nothing to do with the hood. There's a and we've seen that recently in North Carolina, Georgia, and Louisiana.
Okay.
With middle class people just going about their business, not in the hood. There's a neighborhood outside of Houston, an affluent like black development.
Okay.
And I think it's just all black people in this development.
Okay.
They were getting harassed coming to the development and leaving the development. Tickets, being followed, all that. So they hired their own private security force to sit in front of the development. And all the entrance and exits to the development. And they have strict rules on if people call the police for any reason, they have to also call security and let them know that the police are coming.
Wow.
The security watches the neighborhoods 24/7, and they all pitch in for the call. So I think there's different facets to this policing problem. It's not just in the hood, right? And I've also had my run-in also with them.
Okay.
That had nothing to do with the hood when I was making an upper middle class living. So,
let me ask you this, if I might, and it's to the whole panel here. Clearly, there are some breakdowns in communication, okay? Really, when you see law enforcement, I'm going to say within the last 20 years, more so than ever before, it seems as if they're the target of your frustration for many people, not everybody, for many people. And let me ask you this. Where do we find the first step? Having that open dialogue. You used to have officer friendly, you know, some departments tried to use federal community policing dollars to have engagements and DARE programs and things of that nature. But do you think that should come back? I'll start with you, Toronto, and how useful would that be with at least catching young people to have them have, because what you don't see is the many cases where police officers go out and play basketball, they buy toys for children, and they actually bring groceries to certain people. You don't see all of that, right? The media doesn't really show that. But what can we do collectively, do you think, Toronto, that can heighten those type of engagements that are more positive and proactive in nature?
I think we have to look at who is policing certain neighborhoods, right? Which type of police are policing certain neighborhoods. I remember back in the day, people used to fight and scrap. And if the police used to come, they used to break it up with their hands. Remember that? They used to take their hands.
Yeah.
I mean, you might get some extra. You remember? You might get some extra licks from the police. I mean, they may pull out the baton and lick you up a little bit.
Yeah.
But they didn't pull out a gun and just start shooting. They would break it up with their hands.
Or
like, they weren't scared. Yeah, or tasers or something. Like, they get in and say, hey, stop this. What y'all doing? They get in there with their hands, and, you know, like I said, they may hit you a little bit, but they would break up the fight. These days, we don't have those type of police. They see something going on, they reach for the gun. They reach for the gun. They're scared. You know, they're so frightened, they're scared. And I'm just like, what happened to the policing where the police weren't scared to death?
Well,
I don't know what happened.
A lot of them, 1 second, Tim, I'll go to you. Believe it or not, a lot of them have been killed to death. That's what has happened.
There you go. Well, you're absolutely right.
Toronto, I'm not telling what I think. There is a record over the last 20 years, and it has exacerbated itself in the last 5 to 10. The number of law enforcement officers who were killed in the line of duty, believe it or not. That's in
Chicago.
Yeah,
but here's the thing, Rev. Mm-hmm. If you look at who's doing the killing, I mean, we've looked at just recently a killing down in Texas where he killed a couple of police, and he was taken into custody nice and in health and, beat up and not shot. And, you know, and those kind of killings have happened. There's been a recent incident where, you know, there was a guy who drug a police on the side of the truck, right?
Yeah.
And he almost killed the police, but he was taken in
nicely,
you know.
He lived.
So we have to look at, we can't associate the what's going on in the hood with the police being killed, because when we start looking at the killing them.
That guy that drug the police by the truck was killed.
I would like to,
He was killed. That's right. You're right, St. Louis. But there are a lot of incidences where guys have shooting at the police and all of this stuff, and they're taken in. They're just taken in. Will and Rue can go shoot up a whole church, and they go get him a sandwich and everything on the way. Maybe they gave him a shoulder massage. I don't know. Oh, come on.
Hold on. One second. Let's hear from 72. 1 second. Hold your thoughts there. Don't lose your thoughts there. What were
you going to say, 72? Well, I don't know how we got on policing, and the show was about something else. But anyway, to Toronto's point, like he was saying back in the day, how the police would break things up with their hands, but also not just with their hands. They talked. They were social workers. They reasoned with people. They gave people other options other than, I'm going to have to shoot you or kill you or tase you. They was able to communicate. It's like there is no communication now. Is if I come out there, when I come out there, I'm just come blazing.
Well, I think it does begin with talk. It does begin by giving a directive to the individuals. And the individuals refuse to respect the authority. I mean, just look at the cases that I'm glad they got cameras now because you can see this. So it's nothing wrong with the police. It's the people that they come in contact with now.
So there's nothing wrong with the police? Is that what you're saying?
No, police on average is a good police officer, but it's the people that they have to contend with, and we see that you don't have the respect for authority in the home, right? I mean, because there's no mechanism to create respect for authority in so many homes. At school, we see where students slap teachers. And so on and so on. Then, of course, when you get out in the street, it's a bigger case.
All right, let me jump in here right quickly. So here's a dynamic. Consider this dynamic. Now, how does a police get police powers? I'm going to answer my own question. They're commissioned by the municipality or the government that they represent, the county or the city government or municipality.
Yes.
Where does that
state legislature?
The state legislature gives it to the local government, basically, to police that. That's the next. So where does that come from?
That comes directly from the will of the people in those voting precincts and those districts that make up those cities or that county. But what is my point? What is my point? My point is that there is a need for better understanding, communication. And I said this to a gentleman when I was running for public office, who I had a gathering in the barbershop, and we had a pretty full house, a lot of young guys from the streets, and many of them had engagement with police officers and things like that. He said to me, I want to know what the blank blank you're going to do about these police. I said, well, tell me exactly what needs to be done. He cited some examples. I said, well, now, if a person in uniform is coming up to you with no just reason or what have you, you and all your other people see that, they're violating the color law clause in 1964 Civil Rights Act, which says that they are not to use their position of authority to bully you, to harm you, or do anything else. And if you find one of them, you let me know. As your elected official, I'll make sure they're no longer on the force. So there are some things that can be done. The question is, those are people too, and oftentimes they live in your community, your neighborhood. You follow what I'm saying? So in our greater conversation relative to, and we're joined by 8112 out of Peoria, Illinois, in our greater conversation about the model for the social change in urban America. What is that model? Because just being mad at all get out, wanting to tear something up and want to strike, that ain't going to do it. That's not going to do it. Because what happens is when you get through, what we find in the carnage of all that is destroyed neighborhoods, ravished businesses, often black businesses, and lack of resources to bring them back. What have we done to ourselves? Good example of that, the riots of the 60s and what have you. You know, Dr. King was killed. We, our people, tore up all of America where we were. And to this day, the only thing that has started restoring those areas is gentrification. And at the end of the day, a lot of us can't afford to live there no more. Go ahead.
That's a wrong strategy to tear your own neighborhood. Okay. I agree, and I think we all agree. But it was a reaction. And it was a wrong reaction. It may not have been the correct reaction, but it was a reaction to something else that happened. Black people didn't just get up one day and say, hey, let's tear up our neighborhoods and let's burn it down. That's not what happened.
Right. No, that's
it was a reaction to a murder, right? So my thing is that, look, that doesn't explain the incidences that we've been seeing lately. That incident out of Louisiana is so disgusting, where they beat this man to death and tried to lie and say he ran into a tree.
Wow.
This wasn't a guy in the hood.
And was that okay? Is that acceptable?
Oh, hold on. Go ahead.
I agree with you. I agree with you, ma'am. You're absolutely right. That what we're talking about doesn't explain those cases, and those are the cases that we're seeing a lot of today.
You know,
North Carolina, Louisiana, Georgia, these are not guys that are in the hood and criminals. These are middle-class guys just going about their business.
So let me say this right quickly, then I'll yield to St. Louis. Let me say this right quickly. By all means, Toronto, every citizen that care about their neighborhood and their community should want to make sure that every person represented in government capacity is held accountable. Everybody should want that. I agree with you. And there's no excuse for anyone stepping outside those bounds, and no one should make excuses for it.
No.
Having said that, we must also recognize that in the interest of everybody being safe, and we're not having the wild, wild west, we need structure, we need law, and we need order. And there are people who are members of our community who are appointed to sustain and maintain that. Okay, I think St. Louis is trying to say something, then we'll keep our...
Well, you know, you say people don't wake up wanting to tear up their neighborhood. But let me give you an example. In Ferguson, you had blacks that moved into Ferguson, which was a majority black community, and started tearing up their neighborhoods. I'm going to say it again. Blacks who have been living in Ferguson because they moved there escaping crime in North St. Louis City. During Mike Brown leading up to him, you had blacks moving into Ferguson in the low-income houses, tearing up Ferguson, which was predominantly black. Now, guess what these blacks have done now? And it's a shame because they have lost money in their property value because of these actions. And actually, they need to be filing reparations against those that tore up, is tearing up the neighborhood, robbing stores, and causing problems. They are moving further west across the river into all-white St. Charles County, where the majority of the population is predominantly white, super white. And guess what the composition of the police department is? They got white police departments, Patrick. So it can't be that they're scared of whites and white police.
Okay. All right.
My whole thing is not about them being – my whole thing is about punishment. If there's going to be law and order, there needs to be law and order for everybody.
Thank you.
These cops down in Louisiana that's been getting away with it, that up till now, and hopefully they won't get away with it much longer. But there needs to be law and order for everybody. So when the cops do something and murder us, they need to be punished to the fullest extent of the law, just like we are punished.
Sure. So what? Give me an example of what the punishment should look like there, Toronto, if you don't mind.
The punishment is already on the book. There's already there. We don't have to make up anything. If you murder somebody, you should be punished to the fullest extent of the law. This black guy who was minding his business riding down the street was beaten to death by cops who bragged about it, by the way. They found a case where they bragged about beating them to death. And then they falsified the report and said that he ran into a tree, right? So they need to be tried, and if they are convicted of this crime, they need to be punished to the fullest extent of the law, like everybody else.
So what I heard you speaking of is they need to be sent through due process of law, right? Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, but what we don't see, what everybody's skating around, and all political parties are skating around, they never want to talk punishment. They want to talk, we need to defund.
They got
to
be found guilty first.
That's what I'm saying. They need to be tried, and if they are found guilty, they need to be punished to the fullest extent of the law. And if need be, if we can't get justice, then the government needs to step in to make sure that there is justice. I'm not saying to make sure that there is a verdict, but make sure that the process is followed and that we've gone through the due diligence.
That's fair enough. Okay, let me go to 72. She was trying to say something. What were you saying, 72? And then we're going to move
I don't know how we got on this topic, but anyways, I do agree with what Toronto is saying, that the law should be the law for everyone, even
Absolutely.
Not just in the poor, impoverished black communities or the bad black guys that's running up against the police, but the white people as well, the bad white guys that's doing it. Like you said, when there's equal treatment as far as the law is applicable, then people may be okay, and maybe people would start trying to turn around and change. But when it looks like certain people are just getting slapped on the wrist and ice water while others are being killed and gunned down, and like you said, murders being covered up and all that, that's not right. And we should not support that. I know there are some awesome, great police officers. I have some in my family that go out every day and they do their job to the best of their ability. And, yes, they should defend and protect themselves, too, outside of the community, but there's also someone that's able to just skirt by and the force protect them when they're villains, criminals themselves.
Okay. So
that ain't right.
So,
and I think it was upsetting people.
Okay. So let's wrap that portion of the conversation up like this. To your point and to Toronto's point, everybody should be held to whatever per the state that you're in, whatever that code annotated says, crime is, that's the standard. And whatever that codes of annotated per that state says, the punishment for that crime, that should be the standard. What everybody has a right to is due process of the law. And that's a constitutional issue. So I agree with you all that, and that's been said, and I don't think we need to kicking that horse. But I would like to go back a little bit closer to the social change, and I emphasize social being things that people, that involve people. And when we go into urban America, I grew up in urban America. I spent my developmental years in urban America, and I've witnessed some things then, and I see some things now. Sadly, I have to report to you all, beloved, that some things have changed, which tells me that we hadn't made enough collectively, not everybody, but collectively, enough progress have not been made, and that's really what I'm speaking of. When we bring ourselves and subject ourselves to process, actions, steps, and a model that is productive for not just some, but everybody, right? Then we can have progress. We can move forward. We can advance our children. It's interesting. I went to a graduation party, and the parents were giving God the praise, Pastor Waller. And they were saying, I thank the Lord for doing this. And I said to them, you should thank God for you all having the wisdom to be parents and to teach them and to be deliberate. God didn't have to come to heaven to do that because you did that. Give yourself credit. The Bible says, train up a child in the way, not straight, not any way, not make up a way, but there's a way that they should go. And this is the good part about it. When they get old, they won't turn from it. And I want to reiterate here that in terms of this model, there are examples of things that people have done that cause their children to never see what a jail cell looked like, to never know what it feels like to be suspended from school, to never find themselves in a situation where, you know, they are being accused of certain things or anything of that nature. What can we learn from those models? Not that they're better than anyone else. I started in the monologue by saying it's not about trying to keep up with the Joneses, but identify who you are, what is your purpose, what's your direction, and what steps am I going to take to get there? That's a social model that I believe Du Bois, I talked about Du Bois in the monologue, and I talked about Booker T. Washington, talked about the same population from different perspectives. And look, we all bring something that can be useful. If y'all don't mind, let me see if 8112 want to speak to that first, and then we go around the room there. 8112, welcome to our discussion tonight.
No, I don't have anything to say. I'm just kind of tuning in.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I love your voice. You just melt me like butter frying pan.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you.
No. I'm being silly now, but you know I love you like peanut butter love jelly on wheat bread. I ain't going there tonight.
All right.
What do you think about that, Toronto? If you don't mind, that whole concept that we can tap into some successful things that has been done over the years, and we got models of that. That's evidence of that. Does that mean you have to act white or you have to be anybody other than you to do that, Toronto?
I don't think it has anything to do with acting white or anything like that.
Okay.
I think that there are some things that have been done successfully. I think that there are models being built.
Okay.
There are neighborhoods now that are being built to experiment with new models of building a community and supporting families and children and enhancing education right. Not just looking at education from a trying to get the same education, which Dr. Amos Wilson says is kind of useless, right? You should be getting the education appropriate for the children and their needs.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So the kind of education that's required is a progressive and aggressive education, right?
Interesting.
Learning different things, learning things that will project their success into the future. I think those models are being done, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think once there's some successes, then I think at that point maybe it can be duplicated. But there are a lot of things that are being done now that can definitely help, especially as far as families are concerned and parenting
sure.
and that kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I
kind
I,
of
will.
If I might take a, if I may jump on your wagon there, I really believe that it's a good idea to take our strength in our neighborhood, those that's our young people, and show them how those things are being developed and show them how they can plug themselves into it. You see what I mean? And I believe that would be a better use of their time. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you need examples. Going in front of people with anecdotal theories when they're hurting and they're in a bad situation is not really I haven't found that to be effective. If you don't have a working model, if you can't show where their peers are actually are making this thing work, then it's going to be awfully difficult to reach them. It's just words at that point.
Well, you know what I found out? I don't mean that I want to open up the panel. Here's what I discovered. I'm talking about my people now, Toronto. You can't really get my people's attention until they lose certain privileges or freedom. Then you got the attention. Their undivided attention. They want to hear what you're talking about then. And I would like to see us get to the point where we don't have to lose anything to make progress, right? We can add on to what we have.
I think one of the things that I found is that you don't need to wait until they lose it. You take the person that's standing next to them.
Okay.
So if you got some guy standing on the block and you say, okay, I bet you I can take this person. If you run through my program, I can make it a success. Let me take this guy right here standing next to you. If you can take one of their peer groups and they can see it work, they'll be willing to listen, right?
I agree. That makes sense. I mean, that makes sense to me, man. You know, look, fat head and ugly as I am, that makes sense to me, Toronto. That makes a lot of sense to me. What do you think about that, Sam? Does that sound doable to you, sir?
It depends on who you're working with. Because when you look at the academic performance of the black schools, I'm talking about school districts or school buildings, that's majority black, the academic performance is really, really sad.
Okay. Yeah.
And you know the funny thing about this? And I've been doing some exploration. I've looked at the data, and I'll share it with you. I'll tell you where you can find it. I looked up the data of school buildings that's got particular names on them. Malcolm X, Booker T. Washington, Frederick Douglass. I didn't see that Malcolm X, Booker T. Washington, and Louis Armstrong, Mahalia Jackson, majority black. I look at other majority black school buildings like Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, and Kirby Smith. Guess who's blowing the top out of these scores? It's the ones that's named after these soldiers that everybody's trying to take their names off the building. That's what black kids in these particular buildings are outperforming the ones with the other names. If you don't believe me, I'll show you the data and show you where you can get it.
Well, that's an interesting point. Okay, all right. What about that, 37? Wait. What that fall on in terms of taking? I heard what Toronto said in San Luis. We think about how do we get to a point where our energy—that's what I'm talking about—the youthful energy is engaged in this process of replicating good, successful behaviors and models in urban America.
and therefore bringing about the unity. What do you say about that, 7-2?
I think that's what's needed. You're asking me how do we get there?
Any ideas? I don't want to put you on the spot.
Yeah, person by person. I mean, again, we want to reach a large multitude of people at one time, but it's just going to take experience by experience.
Sure.
And sticking with what you know works.
I'm sorry. You know what I really think, 8112? If the media, the mass media, were as invested in playing reel-to-reel, day-by-day, the positive, productive things that go on every day in urban America, that more examples of that would be in the forefront of people. What do you think about that, Twelve?
Personally speaking, and I'm not only speaking of the media, I'm speaking people, period. I've seen some great, powerful people.
Yes.
From the pulpit on down to the drug dealer in a beautiful way.
Okay.
In a beautiful way. We all have challenges. We all walk a different type of lifestyle. One may be doing a little bit better than the other, but who are we to talk about one another?
Okay.
When you put that uniteness in there instead of dividing it and separation, then we all should conquer. This is how I see it. So when you keep taking this section and that section, these are better people. These some of the finest people coming from the finest schools with all the big names and everything else are some of the worstest, horrible, meanest, nastiest people I've ever seen or heard about.
Okay, that's interesting.
And you know another thing too, Ruben.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm coming right to you, Go ahead.
Hey, you know, for instance, like I know a school named Normandy. I know this very well. And they took a day out to celebrate George Floyd. Their graduation rate, this is a high school, the graduation rate 70%, math proficiency 5%, reading proficiency 10-14%. Now, I think that one way to solve these problems, or you work toward it, is take away the sport. If schools are not performing academically, then they shouldn't have sports. Because with only 5% of the students with math proficiency in a football team have how many students on it? 40, 50, 60? All of them are not. Some of them is falling in this 5% and shouldn't be playing sport.
Interesting. Well, now, let me ask you this, St. Louis, before I open go to Saskatchewan. Don't you think that if you take away from that population the opportunity to – I hear what you're saying, that they need to be academically proficient, no doubt about that. And that's the challenge, really, getting
everybody. That's what the school is for.
Yeah, everybody on their level. But I wonder if you take away those other extracurricular activities, such as sports and the arts and things of that nature, don't you create a whole new set of problems for that population that does best? And maybe we can use sports as a motivator. I don't know. And perhaps these are the things that that's a dialogue. That's what a dialogue would be with elected officials, with pastors, with parents, with everyday people in neighborhoods and families and everybody that's affected. That's what a conversation should be, rather than being looking for somebody, something or somebody to be against to turn our attention there. But go ahead, Senator. Let's just create a whole new problem, then we'll go to Pastor Walker.
Well, I think you do. You have a problem where you got a lot of smart kids, because if you got 615 students entering in the ninth grade and you only got 74% graduation rate, that means you're only going to have, out of those 16, that 455 graduate. So what happens to the other 145, 245 kids? So that's not what the object of the school is. It's for sports, football and basketball in particular, is for to make sure that they come out where they can be productive citizens. In this case, going to college. College should be 4 years. If you are carrying a 5% math proficiency, you probably going to be in college 6 years. Well, what happens if you're in there 6 years? If it's $10,000 a year, that's $40,000. If you're in there 6 years, it means that your parents have got to pay $60,000.
Okay. Well, so your point is well taken, that we, and we know that there's a problem. There's a breakdown. That's what we're talking about. Creating, if we don't have it, the model that will get us toward that population of people who, for whatever reason, are not doing well academically. They're not doing well academically. That's what we're talking about. Now, here's the thing. I would tell you all that there are some places that are doing a fabulous job with a small group of people. There are some places right now. The issue is that when we talk about widespread, and that's what I'm talking about, and that's why I brought the mass media, because one of the roles that they can play is to reel every day, all day, demonstrate those models of places and people that are doing fabulous things that you never hear about. But all you hear about is the negative. All you hear about is how and where those babies not doing well, but you don't hear about that similar population with the right variables in place that the difference was made. That's the real. Let me go to Pastor Waller. He's been patiently waiting on me while I keep on moving over. Pastor, what are you going to say about that?
Hey,
yes, sir.
Sports is not everything. But let me explain something to you. But it does mean something, because if you take sports away, you're taking the Bible away. You may as well take the Bible away, because the Bible gives instructions about sports. And that means that not everybody know how to play sports. You know, you got to know that too. But because, you know, you saying that sports is something they need to be excluded, I mean, could you imagine how powerful sports really are, and how much the need is for people to exercise? You know, you take away people. A lot of people are not trying to do the college or go to the pros or do things like that. I remember not long ago, if I'm not mistaken, you can straighten out if I am, that was some people that had some kids in college that didn't even play sports. And their parents spent a lot of money.
Right.
To get them paid.
Yeah,
did that ever happen?
2 years ago. Just 2 years ago. No,
so what I'm saying
money.
Is, huh?
They had
did
money.
That happen or
just a few years ago. We're not talking about 5 years ago.
Your Congressional Black Caucus does that.
Listen to what I'm saying. The Bible says, according to the scripture, now, I'm not my opinion. I don't do opinions because I might be wrong. But doesn't the Bible say that in a race, all run?
That's what it says.
But only one
that's
is tried to run that you may obtain it? That's sports.
That's
and then
right.
It says also in another area, it says in athletics, a man is not crowned unless he competes according to the rules.
Mm.
We're talking about athletics in the Bible. So you're saying, from what I'm hearing, is exclude sports off the planet. It's just like saying, I don't believe in the Bible, no way. Because
what did
the Bible
say about academic performance?
It's the same thing about sports. I'm back to that again. Sports. I'm not talking about nothing else but sports right now. Because I was listening to removing sports as if sports is not valuable.
Well, yeah, in public schools,
Wait a minute, let me finish. I'm not belittling anything else. I'm just talking about sports being excluded, nothing else than sports now, because that's what I heard, remove sports. Did I not hear that?
Absolutely.
It should be
removed.
I'm done. Okay.
Yeah,
Even if the Bible says that sports is valuable, even if the Bible says, you know, the sports is in the Bible, so you say remove the Bible too?
Well, you don't have Bibles in public schools.
No, yes or no. Yes or no. I need a yes or no right now.
Yeah, I say yes. You should remove it because it shouldn't be
remove
and
what?
Is not in public schools.
Remove what?
The Bible. Bibles are not in public schools.
That's all I need to hear. I rest my case.
Okay. Bibles aren't in public schools. But the thing is if you have children that's not being educated and able to perform, now you're starting to deal with a national security issue.
What do you mean by that, St. Louis? The national security issue.
Because you have people that cannot perform in the position that provide national security, cybersecurity, intellectual artificial intelligence, and the application of weapons and surveillance. If you don't have people that can maintain, get at those positions, at those stations, now you dealing with national security. You got those that they can't man your aircraft, the tactical aircraft. You got those that can't man the unmanned aerial systems. You got those who can't man the technology that's used in naval vessels.
Okay. Well, if I might, I will say this. I would love to see more of those roles come out of urban America. I'm one that advocates for that type of, and I know, I think we all agree that we want the best for all of our children, irregardless to where their geographic origin is or their social orientation. We want the best for all of them at the end of the day.
You know,
another
thing too, Detroit's got 600,000 blacks and they can't develop the city. So at a world conference, at a Clinton Foundation conference, Bill Clinton is on video saying that Detroit should be developed using Syrian refugees. Hillary Clinton said it too. So that means that if you can't get things done with those that you have, then what they're going to do is go to somebody else. That's what gentrification is all about. You got an area that's depressed and it's not progressing where it can get on the tax rolls and contribute to the things that taxes are used for. For instance, like funding your schools. Well, they got to do something with that. They got to bring somebody in that can maintain and sustain.
I would certainly hope that is not the case, that someone other than myself is adamant and active about making sure that those types of opportunities for young people growing up in urban America. That's what I would hope. Now, I know that's just a wish
because in St. Louis, they brought in 80,000 Bosnians in South St. Louis.
I get what you're saying. That if one doesn't do it, someone else can, and I agree that unfortunately, the National Area Chamber of Commerce predicted 25 years ago, right here in the county, that there will be certain tech jobs that are now here through Amazon and other places, Nissan, that the children that were in then 25 years ago in middle school would not be able to work. They were spot on. That's something we should be all working to change. Now, if you're going to be paying your tax dollars, investing in the public school system, I'm not necessarily for getting rid of the public schools, but what you should do is to hold those who are accountable for those resources accountable. Just like
well, you ain't gonna, that don't work.
It should work. But it don't. I understand what has happened. What I'm saying is the opportunity lies with. What were you going to say to 4072? Oh, who is it? Okay, is that you, Toronto? Let me go to 72, Toronto, then I'll come back to you. Don't lose your thought. What were you going to say, 72?
I wanted to bless everyone. I've been up since 3 a.m. Wishing everybody a good night.
Thank you for joining us tonight. We appreciate
good night.
It. Appreciate
good
it.
Night.
Good
all
night.
Right, good night. All right. Go ahead there, Toronto. What were you going to say, my friend?
I want to back up what Pastor Waller was saying. Sports is just one way that our young people express themselves. And if you can foster sports, in order to get to a Division I or really even a Division II school playing sports, you have to, number one, you have to study and get you have to get good grades. Number two, you have to get a good score on the ACT or SAT.
Okay.
So in a lot of ways, sports is used to motivate some of our young people to study and to get good grades so that they can play sports and that they can continue to play sports and go into university-level athletics. And as an example, the orthodontist that is taking care of me and my kids since I've been here in Canada, Dr. Morrell is a black orthodontist who started his education by playing basketball for the University of Toronto. And it was there that he went, played basketball for the University of Toronto, then went to dental school, then went to orthodontic school, had a bunch of orthodontic offices around Toronto. He's a multimillionaire. Sold his practice for probably like $15-20 million, and he started a business, like an Invisalign business up here in Canada, while he still has ownership of the company he sold. So
I see.
Sports is a way that some young people express themselves. And if they want to progress in sports, they're motivated to study and get good grades. And I think Pastor Waller knows this. In order to get to a Division I school or even a Division II school, you have to have the grades and you have to pass the ACT and SAT.
You're absolutely right. You know, on the SAT test in private schools, blacks are spotted 310 points on the SAT. Hispanics are spotted 130. Asians are deducted 140 points before they even sit down to take the test. So that means that they have to score 140 points more than whites, 270 points more than Hispanics, and 450 points more than blacks, which they are doing. So what is it that these kids are doing? You know, I was reading an article where it said that they were talking about the college in China. And the dorm lights go out at 11 o'clock at night. Then it went on to say that when the lights go out, the children in the school walk out onto the street, sit down on the curb, and they continue to study by street light. Black kids ain't doing that.
Well, that's something we should be working towards, creating the social model. See, that goes back to the point, a social model that brings that type of change. I agree with you. That would be wonderful. That'd be wonderful. And that begins at home. That ends at home. That is where that conversation. No, Chip. Who was that trying to? Was that you, Toronto, trying to say something?
Yeah. So, we have to understand that these different cultures and the way that they educate. There's a lot of, I mean, they're able to educate them and they're able to learn a lot. But there's some things that's not the greatest with some of the way that these kids are being taught. Yes, they're being able to understand and retain a lot of information. But there are other aspects to it as well. So when I was managing, I was a director of an engineering department. And so I had most of my people that worked for me were either Chinese or Southeast Asian, Indian, right? And one of the things I noticed, and one of the guys that was Chinese actually told me this, is the reason why he moved to North America and he wanted his kids raised in North America, is because with Chinese, they do the rote learning, but there are other aspects of leadership and being in social skills that are not developed. So these kids learn a lot, and they're very smart. If you put them on a task, they can do the task, no problem. Very smart. But when they have to think out of the box and be creative, it was a problem, right? So we have to look at all aspects of learning and understand that, yes, there are some cultures, and they have had great success, but we have to look a little bit deeper. We have to look a little bit deeper into how they learn and what the benefits and trade-offs are on that type of education.
We should look at Nigerians. They black also. They outperform Asians. You know, another thing. Look at your and you're about out of town. Look at your Nobel Peace Prizes. Now, of course, we know early on in the history of discrimination or something. By the way, the United States have twice as many Nobel Peace Prize winners than the next closest nations. But when you look at those prize winners that are black, you got one in literature, and that's Toni Morrison, and you got three in peace, Barack Obama, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King. You got four, and Kofi Annan out of Ghana. They're in peace, not chemistry, not science, not nuclear physics, not the what you call the STEM fields.
Well, let me say this, gentlemen. I think it's important to realize that when we start talking about black and Chinese, really what we should focus on is the socialization, right? And that has a lot to do with certain value-based things for learning, instruction, and things of that nature. And that differ from place, from country to country, from nation to nation, from culture to culture. When we're talking about the subcultural context of urban America, there is a specific socialization that we have to look at when we try to introduce new instruction of information. And when we talk about learning, what we talk about is that change in behavior, measurable change in behavior after you've been exposed to certain information. So the question becomes, what is it that we're teaching that will hopefully modify the behaviors that we're looking for in a positive, productive way? And so that's really what I'm speaking about in terms of this model for social change. I want to see our young people use their mind for more than, unfortunately, and this is not everybody, and make that very clear, but too many of my young people are using their minds to be destructive, counterproductive, okay? And I want to see them channel those energies in a proactive way such that 10 years from now, 20 years from now, they can see what they built. Not what they
Well, I agree with you, and you're getting ready to go around, but I'm going to say this.
Yeah.
I'm a strong proponent for school choice. I believe that parents who have children that come from a functional home and family where they are made and pushed and supported, they need to be taken, allowed to take their child where they think is best. This stuff, this old slogan I hear, that all blacks need to stick together. Well, why would you want to keep your child? Well, actually, what you're doing is sacrificing your child. Why would you sacrifice your child to an environment where they're not learning and they are with others whose parents don't care if they learn or not? You shouldn't do that. If they want to play basketball and football all the time, well, let me take my child and put them someplace where they can be reading, doing math, and working in chemistry and science. That's all they ask.
Okay.
If you want, we talk about against segregation, but you want to integrate or keep all kids in the same environment. That don't work. It hasn't worked. The numbers say it don't work, and you know that yourself. So that's what I say. That's one aspect. You give them full choice.
I think that's a vital part of our conversation moving forward. There. Okay, appreciate that. We'll let you start our rubber room that go around, and we still have Toronto here with us and Pastor Wallace. So Toronto, go ahead. Let's give you a final thought from you, and then we'll wrap it up with that. Good conversation. We've been talking from the topic model for social change in urban America. And let me be selfish. That's all I'm concerned about, the urban American plight. That's all I care about right now. And I'm trying to find that model for it. But, Toronto, final thought there?
Yeah, so, I think as individual, I think you have to do an assessment and try to figure out what these, you know, a lot of these young people are actually interested in, you know, and steer them in a certain direction. As far as education is concerned, I mean, I think that, you know, we're going to need a new model for education. I don't know why we can't view some of these churches as schools, but that's another conversation for another day.
I love it.
But it was a good conversation anyway, and I just think we, you know, everybody, you know, different people are trying different things to find an answer, you know, for these things, and I think there are some people out there actually trying to put together a model, and we'll see how successful they are. Hopefully, somebody's successful that we can, you know, yeah,
right. And if there's some kind of way we can help them make it useful, let's do that. You know what I mean? Let's invest our energies in making it useful for them. Because if it's going to help the greater good. I think Immanuel Kant, the philosopher, said the sacrifice, the lesser for the greater good is that I'll be the sacrificial one. You can sacrifice me to love. Don't put me on the cross. I'll go up there if I stay the rest of it.
the churches are free during school hours. That's all I got to say.
But y'all not, boy, you, look, you, there you go meddling again. But I'm with you on that. I'm meddling with you on that. All right. Well, thank you. We appreciate that, man. We appreciate you sharing that perspective. All right. Well, Pastor Wilder, with that, we're going to wrap it up for tonight. We've been talking from the conversation, a model for social change in urban America. I'm selfish. That's all I'm concerned about, right? You, other places could be good, and I pray for them, but I'm trying to do something in urban America. Pastor Wilder, what about it, man? Wrap us up for tonight.
Oh, man, give me the waymaker, man. Just give me the waymaker all the way, brother, because I know it's he who made this day and not we ourselves. So without him, nothing can be done, good, bad, right or wrong, up, down, like it or not. I know the word of God says Jesus made it known. He says, in me, you'll have peace, but in the world, you'll have tribulation. He said, but be of good courage, good cheer. I've overcome the world. Could you imagine being hooked up with the one who knows all about everything that's going on this earth? And to exclude him would be a foolish thing to do. So include him and watch what happens. Put him first. He's worthy of it.
Okay.
That's my way of saying I believe in him. I'm going to stand on it, and that's my truth.
All right.
I yield back
all
to
right.
you.
Yes, sir. We'll let Tyrone Davis. I agree with Tyrone Davis. A turning point in my life. We'll see y'all Thursday for another episode of Talk.
I see the turning point in my life. I better get. She's 1 out of 110. And she don't get excited now, no. I don't speak off of men. She's a wizard around the house. She'd have a friend. If I got a hole in my sock, got a hole in my shirt, I'd be thank you, men.
Yeah.
Don't know who's staying out, baby.
No, not for me, not for me.
No.